On this channel, I try to cover a mix of both big stories and small. Fraud and corruption comes in all shapes and sizes, and so I think it's important to cover both. But the failure of the First National Bank of Lindsay, a tiny bank in a tiny Oklahoma town that nobody seems to care about, is the first time I've ever found a big story hiding inside of what I thought was a small story. It was initially dismissed as an extension of the bank failures that started in 2023, that is, by the few media outlets that even bothered to cover it in the first place. But last October, as I dug into this story and began speaking with local residents, I realized something much darker was going on in this little town. This is the culmination of a year-long investigation into tens of millions of dollars disappearing in a town that's eerily reminiscent of a Jack Reacher book or, God forbid, another Roadhouse reboot. A town that lies right along one of the most prolific drug smuggling and human trafficking corridors in America, a corridor that's used by both Chinese organized crime and Mexican drug cartels to launder money and poison middle America. It's a story about a group of criminals that have bled dry at least two towns, bankrupted a local utility, nearly bankrupted a taxpayer-funded nonprofit medical clinic for the poor, covered up the sexual assault of more than a dozen underage girls at a school, the alleged beating and attempted suffocation of two women by the same man, two suicides, and even the most bizarre connection to this guy, Joe Exotic, the freaking Tiger King. What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and on October 18th, 2024, the First National Bank of Lindsay, Oklahoma failed and was taken into receivership by the FDIC. And 3 days later, I made this video, and in that video, I described how there was just something off about this bank and this town. I pulled the bank's balance sheet and realized there was a $43 million hit to the deposit insurance fund. That's a cost that was borne by the taxpayers. There was also $7.1 million of uninsured deposits. A lot of businesses lost money and couldn't make payroll after this. And there was $10 million of bank capital that went up in smoke. All told, nearly $60 million had simply vanished into thin air in this tiny little town, and that just didn't sit right with me. In that video, I made a call to the residents of Lindsay, Oklahoma to come forward and tell their story about what was going on in this town, and the residents of Lindsay came through. More than a dozen people in town reached out to me and told their stories. In some cases, it was very difficult for them to tell their stories. I know because they were very hard for me to sit and listen to. What's happened to these people is unbelievable. And almost everybody I talked to specifically requested that their names be left out of any finished videos that I produce on this. And when I went through the local Facebook group and some of the local media, I understood exactly why those requests for anonymity were made. There is a pattern in this town of using threats of retaliation, either social, financial, or otherwise, to suppress any discussion of the rampant fraud and corruption that's going on in Lindsay. And when you see the criminal histories and the things that the people involved here have done, you'll understand why these people didn't want their names in the video. I want to personally thank each and every one of you who came forward with this information. And to all the people who tried to silence them, better luck next time. Now, geography plays a very important role in this story. Lindsay, Oklahoma, and its population of about 2,900 people, lies about 40 miles south of Oklahoma City and just 15 miles west of the I-35 corridor. And that I-35 corridor is vitally important to this story. That corridor is known by the Department of Justice as Corridor F, one of 8 major drug smuggling transportation routes in the United States. It runs all the way down south from Laredo, Texas, which is one of the busiest border crossings in the country, all the way north to Duluth, Minnesota, branching off at the north there, connecting to Chicago, Illinois. And Garvin County, and within that, the town of Lindsay, is right in the middle of it. We've got this one from back in March of this year, Garvin County cracking down on I-35 drug trafficking. Garvin County is cracking down on drug trafficking along Interstate 35. Sheriff Jim Mullett said the interstate is a drug corridor where traffickers move fentanyl, meth, black market marijuana, and counterfeit pills from the U.S.-Mexico border up north. And at the bottom of this article, there's some important details that we might need later. From Ziploc baggies and suitcases and hidden compartments to duct tape packages and tires, Mullett said they've seen it all. I've seen things in fender wells. I've seen things hidden in tires. I've seen hidden compartments made for that travel, Mullett said. I've seen where they've unwelded a frame, shoved everything in the frame of their vehicle, and welded the frame back. Now, that's interesting. That would require some type of automotive shop, wouldn't it? Put a pin in that. We'll be back to that one. And believe it or not, contributing majorly to this problem is the threat of illegal marijuana grow operations. Now, I can already hear the eyes rolling from a lot of you. I understand that it's the 2020s and that the opinion around marijuana has changed recently, but this is different here. It's not about the marijuana itself. It's about the people that are running these operations. Oklahoma's secret war. OBN director reveals growing threat of illegal marijuana farms. And I want to emphasize the illegal part here. Growing marijuana has been legalized in Oklahoma. However, most of the grow operations within Oklahoma are illegal. And those illegal grow operations have flooded the market with so much product that legitimate business owners trying to run a legal operation are unable to turn a profit, and it's driving more and more people into crime. Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics Director Donnie Anderson highlights a surge in illegal marijuana farms linked to organized crime, primarily from China, emphasizing the significant national security and drug-related implications of this issue. News on 6's Lori Fulbright sat down with the director of the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics, Donnie Anderson. He says meth still kills more people in Oklahoma than any other drug, but fentanyl is catching up fast. However, he says the number one issue is illegal marijuana farms, mostly operated by organized crime groups from places like Bulgaria, Russia, and primarily China. He says Chinese criminals launder money for the cartels and provide the chemicals to make the drugs. Anderson says these transnational criminal organizations have assassinated people in Oklahoma and have trafficked children for sex. He believes that Oklahomans have been kept in the dark for too long. He says, make no mistake, the Chinese government is fully aware. They're very much aware of what's going on in the U.S. with Chinese nationals. There are people in Oklahoma who have direct ties to the Chinese government. I know people don't like to hear that, and people don't even like me talking about it, but it is a fact, and our people need to know that, said Anderson. Anderson said these are the same criminals tied to espionage, terrorist attacks, and sex trafficking of children. He says that's not speculation, but based on the intelligence they gather in their investigations, it's so much more than just drugs. This is a communist country. I'm telling you, they have a stranglehold on us, and they know what's going on, and we're letting it happen. And I want to zero in on this sentence here from the middle where he says these Chinese criminals launder money for the cartels. He's talking about the Mexican cartels now that the Chinese organized crime launders money for and provide the chemicals to make the drugs. Now, this is very important to understand how these illegal marijuana grows fit into this. There is a very large Chinese diaspora in the United States, Chinese people living here. A lot of them have been trafficked in by the Mexican cartels who figured out it's just as profitable to move people as it is to move drugs. Now they're living here and they need cash here. And the way the Chinese make this happen is with something called mirror transactions. If you're a Chinese national in China and you want to immigrate to the United States, you can't take your money with you. They have very strict capital controls on the movement of money out of the country. So you deposit your money at one of these shadow banks in China, and then you head over to South America and start making your way to the U.S. via these various human smuggling networks. Now, once you reach the United States, there is cash here waiting for you. That cash has been sourced by the illegal proceeds from the sales of the drugs that are being sold by these Mexican cartels in the United States. This is dirty money, and it's being made available to people when they arrive here. Now, in exchange, the Mexican cartels are getting what they need from the Chinese. In some cases, they're getting finished consumer goods that they can sell at their legitimate businesses that are fronts for the cartel, and thus that illegal money has now been cleaned into the financial system. It's perfectly laundered. Or even worse, they can get the precursor chemicals that they need for the manufacture of the really nasty stuff, the meth and the fentanyl, that is killing people in the United States by the hundreds of thousands. Understand, these illegal marijuana grow operations in Oklahoma are enabling the slaughter of Americans in unbelievable numbers, and this town is right in the middle of it. And the effect of that organized crime was laid bare in this article from ProPublica in March of last year, Gangsters, Money, and Murder, How Chinese Organized Crime is Dominating America's Illegal Marijuana Market. From California to Maine, Chinese organized crime has come to dominate much of the nation's illicit marijuana trade, an investigation by ProPublica and The Frontier has found. Along with the explosive growth of this criminal industry, the gangsters have unleashed lawlessness, violence, drug trafficking, money laundering, gambling, bribery, document fraud, bank fraud, environmental damage, and theft of water and electricity. Huh. Theft of water and electricity. That might come in handy later. Put a pin in that. Among the victims are thousands of Chinese immigrants, many of them smuggled across the Mexican border to toil in often abusive conditions at farms ringed by fences, surveillance cameras, and guards with guns and machetes. A grim offshoot of this indentured servitude, traffickers force Chinese immigrant women into prostitution for the bosses of the agricultural workforce. Guys, this borders on modern-day slavery right here in the United States, happening under our noses. The mobsters operate in a loose but disciplined confederation overseen from New York by mafias rooted in southern China, according to state and federal officials. Known as triads because of an emblem used long ago by secret societies, these criminal groups wield power at home and throughout the diaspora and allegedly maintain an alliance with the Chinese state. Note that these Chinese triads operating in Oklahoma are managed by mafias in New York. And you better believe that was front and center in this story about the single largest fine ever paid by a bank in the United States. TD Bank hit with $3 billion penalty in U.S. money laundering settlement. This article was in October of 2024 by the International Consortium of Independent Journalists. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the Canada-based bank created an environment that allowed financial crime to flourish. According to prosecutors, TD Bank's U.S. unit failed to uphold proper anti-money laundering controls for almost a decade. From 2014 to 2023, during which time prosecutors said numerous criminal enterprises were able to transact through the bank, this included a Chinese drug trafficking group that bribed bank employees and was ultimately able to launder more than $470 million in cash linked to the sale of fentanyl and other illegal drugs, as well as another money laundering scheme that sent tens of millions of dollars to Colombia. So you can see how this entire global network is operating. You've got these Chinese triads operating in Oklahoma, running the illegal grows, helping the Mexicans to launder the money from their fentanyl and their meth operations. In exchange, the Mexican cartels are getting precursor elements to make more meth and more fentanyl. The Chinese triads are laundering the money through U.S. banks. Understand, guys, this is not a couple of dealers selling joints to teenagers. This is a global narco-terrorist operation with street values in the billions and body counts in the hundreds of thousands. And there are specific examples of these networks operating within the town of Lindsay. Take this one here from just 6 months before the bank failed. Fake Amazon van found in Missouri leads to illegal marijuana operation in Lindsay. Authorities say an investigation into a fake Amazon van found in Missouri led Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics agents to an alleged illegal marijuana operation in Lindsay. On Monday, the OBN's marijuana enforcement team served a warrant at Brightstones LLC in Lindsay as part of an ongoing investigation into illegal activity involving the marijuana grow facility, according to a news release. The investigation started in January when Missouri State Police stopped a fake Amazon van for several traffic violations entering the state from Oklahoma. OBN began an investigation into this black market shipment and discovered Brightstones LLC had obtained its license by fraud using a straw ownership scheme, Woodward said in the news release. The main target of this investigation has been linked to several other illegal marijuana operations in Oklahoma. So a straw ownership scheme, that is where the Chinese gangsters hire an American citizen to obtain the license to grow the marijuana, and then the Chinese gangsters run the operation. That is known as a straw operation, and it is absolutely illegal. And even in my discussions with Lindsay residents, one person went so far as to mention, and I'm paraphrasing here, how much the Chinese will pay a white person to be the face of their business. These straw operations are rampant. They're all over Lindsay and they're all over Oklahoma. And here's a satellite image of that exact location that was raided by OBN. You can see 50 greenhouses at this one location, this one grow out of six others tied to this same outfit that was busted just 6 months before that bank in Lindsay failed. And here is a Google Street View of that exact location. And when you zoom in here, you can see there's the barbed wire fences erected around the grow operation, just like they discussed in that ProPublica article about the human trafficking. And right here, you can see the sign that says 24-hour monitored, armed security, no visitors. There's the armed guards and the cameras that the ProPublica article described. It is happening right here in the town of Lindsay. And again, this was broken up, tied to six other operations right before that bank failed. So now that we've established the setting for the town of Lindsay, let's talk about the failure of the bank, and in particular, these three, the main players involved here: bank owner Jack Justice, CEO Danny Seibel, and Vice President Clint Simonton. Now, first on our list is the number three man at the bank, Vice President Clint Simonton. Now, based on all of my interviews with local residents, Clint Simonton was very highly regarded, well-liked, and well-respected within the town. On September 27th, just days before the bank was taken into receivership by the FDIC, Clint Simonton took his own life. This fact was missed by virtually all media coverage of the bank, and it was the first thing that clued me in that something was majorly wrong in this town. Next on our list is the bank CEO, Danny Seibel. Now, as of the making of this video, Danny Seibel is the only individual to have been indicted for anything having to do with the bank. He was actually just indicted last week, and we'll get to that indictment in a minute here because the trail at this bank had gone cold right up until that indictment was released, and there were some important clues in there about other individuals that may have been involved in the bank's failure. And sadly, Clint Simonton is not the first person in close proximity to Danny Seibel to take their own life. This is Danny Seibel's second wife, Marietta Seibel. And on September 24th, 2012, Marietta Seibel died from an apparent suicide via prescription drug overdose. Danny Seibel bought the medication to her and an argument ensued. Danny Seibel was the last person to see her alive. Next on our list is the bank's owner, Jack Justice. Now, in addition to the bank, Jack Justice also owns a pharmacy and a retirement home in nearby towns. And besides his many business interests, it seems Jack Justice also does some volunteer work on the side. This is the ProPublica website for the South Central Medical and Resource Center. This is a nonprofit medical clinic in Lindsay, Oklahoma that provides primary care, mental health, and all kinds of healthcare services for the poor. This is federally funded, mainly through HRSA 330 grants, which is meant to assist with the funding of healthcare for underserved communities. And based on the nonprofit's return filings from 2023, which would have been filed in 2024, you can see here that Jack Justice is listed as a board member. And also of note, you'll notice below Jack Justice, Danny Seibel is listed as the board treasurer. So let's see what kind of a job these guys were doing running this federally funded nonprofit healthcare facility. And right above my head here already, you can see that the books at this place were something of a mess. Just based on the difference between expenses and revenues for 2024, you can see this facility ran about $800,000 in the red last year. And unfortunately, the more you read here, the worse things get. If you look all the way over on the right there, under details, an independent audit commissioned by this organization for the fiscal year ending December of 2024 identified a going concern flag, material non-compliance, material weakness in internal controls, and significant deficiencies in internal controls. And this audit for years 2023 and 2024 identified more red flags than a parade of Chinese youth. Here's just a couple of the highlights. During our audit of South Central Medical and Resource Center, we could not locate any documentation that the organization had prepared monthly bank reconciliations for any of its bank accounts during fiscal year ended December 31st, 2024. No documentation could be found where the organization performed a physical inventory of medical supply or pharmaceutical items at year-end December 31st, 2024. During our audit of fiscal year 2024, disbursements from a sample size of 74, we could not find documentation where any of the disbursements selected for review had been reviewed and approved by management. Money was just walking out of the door in this place. Remember, Danny Seibel was the treasurer of this organization. We could not locate any documentation that the organization had applied the federal procurement standards to any of its expenditures during the year. During the audit period, the organization routinely overdrafted its primary operating bank account. During the audit of cash management and disbursement activities, we could not locate any documentation that the expenditures had been reviewed and approved prior to the funds being drawn down from the federal government, your tax dollars at work. Now, it's also important to note that in that auditor's report, it makes several mentions of corrective actions that are currently underway at South Central Medical and Resource Center, and that there have been some management changes made at the facility. And just looking at this most recent Form 990 tax return for the year ended December 31st, 2024, this would be a document that was filed earlier this year, there are some names missing from the current board of directors. In particular, Jack Justice and Danny Seibel are no longer volunteering at this organization. Now, also of note is that on October 25th of 2024, just a few days after the bank failed, bank owner Jack Justice sued Danny Seibel and Danny Seibel's wife, Debbie, for the fraud at the bank. Justice maintains that he was a victim in this fraud and that Seibel was the one who ripped him off. Now, it's also important to notice right above my head here that this case has since been dismissed pending the outcome of Seibel's indictment. And in an interesting turn of events, before the case was dismissed, Seibel did file a response to the suit where he insisted that his wife had nothing to do with it and basically admitted to bank fraud, but said he was only trying to help. Right there in the middle of the page, Deborah had no knowledge of any of the stated allegations put forth. She had no part in any of the allegations. Danny did make misrepresentations material, both in documentation and communications, which were relied upon by Mr. Justice and other directors for the purpose of decision-making. This was discovered in the fall of 2024 during the OCC safety and soundness examination of the First National Bank of Lindsay. It was never my, Danny, intention to deceive, mislead, or falsely assure Mr. Justice or other directors of the institution, nor federal oversight. I, Danny, solely took actions that went against my fiduciary responsibilities to the board of directors of the First National Bank of Lindsay and its customers. Those actions were wrongly taken out of deep internal fear for my job and position within the community. I truly believed I could eventually correct these actions with minimal loss to the bank. I truly wanted to help the Lindsay community and believed in certain customers, now knowing that belief was a mistake. This suit was filed awful quickly, and Seibel copped to the whole thing awful quickly, all while claiming, of course, that he was just trying to help his community. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I've been investigating this bank in this town for more than a year now, and for a while this trail had gone cold, but that all changed on December 3rd with this indictment of bank CEO Danny Seibel. Seibel was charged with 18 different counts, ranging from conspiracy to fraud to making false entries, obstruction, and failure to maintain an anti-money laundering program. Here are some of the highlights from this indictment. On page 14 of the indictment, where Seibel is charged with obstructing the examination of a financial institution, right away that whole argument that he never meant to deceive anybody gets thrown right out the window. On September 11th, 2024, that's a little over a month before the bank was taken into receivership by the FDIC, Danny Seibel corruptly obstructed or attempted to obstruct an examination of a financial institution by the OCC. In particular, Seibel provided the OCC with a false and fraudulent daily maintenance report for June 27th, 2024 that omitted hundreds of changes that Seibel had manually made to the due date, maturity date, and times past due of numerous First National Bank loans. After Seibel learned that the OCC had obtained an unaltered copy of the daily maintenance report for the June 27, 2024 date, he texted another bank employee, "I think I'm nailed to the wall now. I gave them a report that is not the same as what they got now, and they have both. Nobody's fault but my own. Also, delete these texts." Now, they don't tell us who this other bank employee is, but keep in mind the timeline here. September 11th, Seibel provides the false report. Sometime after that, the OCC gets their hand on the accurate report, and it was September 27th that Clint Simonton took his own life. It's also important to note that nowhere in this document is the name Clint Simonton mentioned, not once. Also noteworthy is bullet 33 on page 16 for count 18, failure to maintain an anti-money laundering policy. Between at least 2020 and in or around March of 2024, Seibel willfully failed to file reports on any suspicious transactions, including his own loan fraud. Between at least 2020 and 2024, Seibel also advised customers to make cash deposits below the bank's required $10,000 reporting threshold and personally executed or assisted in executing transactions that should have been flagged as suspicious according to the bank's own policy for detecting potential criminal activity. There's only two reasons to advise people to make deposits below $10,000. That's known as structured deposits, and it is a crime. Those two reasons are one, tax evasion, and two, money laundering. Danny Seibel was supposed to be in charge of the bank's anti-money laundering program. Laughably, he was the Bank Secrecy Act agent. And here he is personally instructing customers how to deposit cash in the bank without raising any red flags. Keep in mind the kind of criminal enterprises that take place in and around Lindsay. But the clues I needed to really get this investigation up and running again are found on page 3, where the indictment describes these three unnamed borrowers, borrower 1, 2, and 3. These are the people who Danny Seibel was helping to either steal, embezzle, or otherwise defraud the bank. And based on my interviews with Lindsay residents, my own research, and the description provided in this indictment, I've been able to find individuals in Lindsay who perfectly match each description. Borrower 1 was an FNBO customer who owned a trucking company and other businesses based in Lindsay, Oklahoma. Borrower 1's trucking company maintained an FNBL business checking account that was frequently overdrawn. I've been able to confirm that borrower number 1 is this man, Cody Cordell. Cordell owns a trucking company in Lindsay called Bunch Trucking, and prior to the release of this indictment, Cordell was already on my radar as a potential person of interest in this bank failure. Further confirming that Cordell is borrower number 1 is this separate indictment that was filed on August 7th of this year, United States versus Cody Dylan Cordell, on several weapons charges. On May 20th, 2011, Cordell pleaded guilty to a criminal misdemeanor domestic violence offense in Garvin County District Court and received a 1-year suspended sentence. On October 15th, 2015, Cordell was sentenced to 15 months in federal prison for a federal wire fraud conviction, a felony. On February 10th, 2020, Cordell was convicted in Garvin County District Court of one count of child abuse by injury. Cordell received a 6-year deferred sentence. And there it is under point 7 there, confirming that Cody Cordell is borrower number 1 from Danny Seibel's indictment. On October 18th, 2024, First National Bank of Lindsay was closed by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation was named as the bank's receiver. During this investigation, Cordell, who was a customer of FNBL, was identified as a person of interest. Investigators obtained Cordell's financial records as part of the FNBL bank failure investigation. The financial records showed there were two separate gun purchases made at Murph's Guns in 2020 and at R&R Gun Sales in 2023. Those were both straw purchases where another individual made the purchases for Cordell. Those weapons were found in Cordell's home in drawers containing Cordell's stuff, so you can add two alleged weapons charges to his rap sheet. Cordell is the owner of Bunch Trucking LLC, which operates in the town of Lindsay. He's also the owner of CDC Ag Transport LLC, another company operating out of Lindsay. Now, Cordell bought Bunch Trucking from this guy right next to me, Justin Bunch. Now, Justin Bunch runs a similar oil field services company out of the same location that Cody Cordell currently operates Bunch Trucking out of. That company is called Diamond Pipe Service LLC and Diamond Hydro Testing and Scanning LLC. Now, those are showing as temporarily closed on Google. There's no way of knowing if this is connected to the bank or not. I have no reason to suspect it is. A lot of companies in and around Lindsay are suddenly closed ever since problems happened at the bank because a lot of business owners lost money because only half of the uninsured deposits at the bank were backed up by the FDIC, something I talked about in that first video. It was a big deal when Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank went down. We can't let big Silicon Valley tech bros lose money. But when small operations in a flyover country, when they lose money in a bank, the FDIC looks the other way. But Justin Bunch does give us another dotted line back to Danny Seibel, the CEO of the bank. Justin's cousin, Michael Todd Bunch, he goes by his middle name Todd. He's the owner of Todd's Hotshot and Oilfield Services, and he's also the former superintendent of Nenica Public Schools. And there's a lot I could say about Todd Bunch, but why don't I just let his record speak for itself? Just 25 miles northwest of Lindsay is the small town of Nenica, and there Todd Bunch was the superintendent of schools. Which brings us to this one from August of 2021. Nenica school officials and sheriff's office accused of cover-up in sexual abuse case. Over a span of 10 years while Todd Bunch was the superintendent of schools in Nenica, the girls' basketball coach sexually abused more than a dozen young girls, some as young as 13. Todd Bunch was one of several school officials that was notified of this abuse several times, and they did nothing to stop this abuse from happening. Quite the opposite, they actually actively suppressed the story. Some of the girls were threatened that they could be sued for falsely accusing somebody. They were told they were going to destroy a man's life and they better think about what they're doing. All the kinds of things that people who protect predators might say. And there, front and center in the top row, is school superintendent Todd Bunch. Now, he would be forced to resign over this cover-up. But the damage this predator and the people who protected him, including Todd Bunch, have done to the town of Nenica wasn't done yet. We got this one shortly thereafter. Lose-lose situation, sexual abuse settlement inflates Nenica property taxes and infuriates residents. Nenica community members left Monday night's Nenica Public School Board meeting disappointed and irritated over a tax hike arising from the $7.5 million settlement of a lawsuit alleging district leaders failed to stop the decade-long behavior of former girls basketball coach and convicted sexual predator Ronald Gene Akins. Board members told attendees the school's insurance will cover $1 million of the settlement, while another $500,000 will be taken from the school's general fund. NPS Board of Education President Brock Perryman said the general fund currently contains $815,000, which means more than half will be used towards the settlement. The depletion barely allows the school to stay operational, according to Perryman, and it still leaves a whopping $6 million owed after 3 years to 14 victims of Akins' abuse. Lacking funds to pay the full settlement, school board members voted in September to raise property taxes for all property owners within Nenica Public School boundaries to pay off the remaining $6 million of the settlement. The Grady County Assessor told a KFOR reporter that there are 2,235 property owners within the district, all of whom will have to pay around $1,000 in additional property taxes over the next 3 years. It's bad enough that there was one victim of this abuse, but because Todd Bunch and the school administration and local law enforcement all ran interference for this guy, there was 14 victims. And as if that's not bad enough, now the school is broke. More than half of the general fund was used to pay for this, which means every student left in that school will now pay the price with a school that has no money. Understand, Oklahoma is already 48th in the nation in education, which means an underfunded and poorly performing school is going to get even worse. And on top of that, every single property owner in town will now have to pay higher taxes in order to pay for Todd Bunch and others protecting this predator. An entire town has been victimized here. But Todd Bunch doesn't just protect predators. Todd Bunch is accused of being a predator himself. In 2015, Bunch was charged with domestic assault, charges that would be dropped when the victim refused to cooperate with law enforcement. But that wasn't the only time. In 2018, Bunch would again be charged with domestic assault when he was accused of trying to smother his sleeping girlfriend with a pillow. Lacey Lowry reported on this. Superintendent arrested. Nenica Public School Superintendent Michael Todd Bunch has been charged with domestic abuse and battery. Court documents say Lindsay police found Bunch's girlfriend upset at a gas station in June. The woman told officers she was asleep at home when Bunch tried to smother her with a pillow. She told police she fought him off, then ran to safety a mile away from her home, wearing only a t-shirt and underwear. Bunch pleaded not guilty. He was still employed as superintendent of Nenica Public School Board, and they were working through the allegations. Now, it's important to note here that Todd Bunch was found not guilty of these charges. He was acquitted. And interestingly enough, there was a character witness in his trial. The star character witness at Todd Bunch's trial for this domestic assault was none other than First National Bank of Lindsay CEO Danny Seibel. And you might be shocked to learn that after allegedly getting away with it twice, Todd Bunch allegedly did this a third time. former Nitica superintendent facing rape and domestic assault charges, this time in 2022. Todd Bunch was arrested on a warrant issued Tuesday on charges of rape and domestic assault. Bunch posted his $100,000 bond on Wednesday. The affidavit contains gruesome details of a rape and assault. The victim claims she had been in an on-and-off relationship with Bunch since August of 2018. In the document, the victim claims the assault occurred back in June 8th at the Omni Hotel in Oklahoma City. Her and Bunch were at the hotel for a work event. Hotel staff took pictures of the room following a call about a security concern from a person staying in a room next to Bunch's. That person claims they heard a woman screaming. The pictures show makeup and blood smeared across the pillows in the room. So here you've got a guy who covered up the sexual assault of 14 young girls at a school, bankrupting the school, forcing an entire poor town to pay for his cover-up. And now for a third time, he's been accused of domestic assault. The second time he was acquitted because the bank CEO, who was a pillar of the community, testified to his character. Now, this story has taken me to some pretty dark places. The victim of this latest assault came forward and spoke about the ordeal and described how at one point she couldn't even hear herself scream through the pillow anymore, and she had accepted that she was about to die when security intervened. And I also asked her about the details of Todd Bunch's business dealings in town, and she had some interesting details to share. During my interview with the victim of the alleged assault, she mentioned that starting around 2021, Todd began making regular fuel deliveries to Chinese-run marijuana grow operations in the Lindsay area from his oil services company, Todd's Hotshot and Oilfield Services. These growers were being forced to use on-site generators because the local utility would no longer allow them to pay for electricity in cash. And that's a very important detail because it ties us into another case of millions of dollars going missing in the town of Lindsay. In November of last year, shortly after the bank failed, we got this one. Amid bank failure fallout, City of Lindsay audit reveals gross mismanagement. Already facing turmoil with the federal takeover of a failed local bank and the seemingly related suicide of a prominent community leader, the City of Lindsay was further rocked Wednesday with the release of a new audit that found significant mismanagement of municipal finances from July 1st of 2019 to June 30th of 2022. Auditors detailed numerous findings in their 25-page report, such as underbilling commercial customers for utilities, holding tax revenue earmarked for the Lindsay Public Works Authority and incorrect bank accounts, and failing to undergo audits. Very conveniently, the City of Lindsay had fired their auditor years earlier and had not appointed a replacement, so nobody was looking at what was happening with the town's finances. Among the issues identified in the audit were multiple metering problems for the city's electric utility, which caused $1.5 million of underbilling on commercial customers. The city expects to recover about $676,000 of that amount. Now, you may recall from that ProPublica article about how Chinese triads had taken over the illicit marijuana trade in Oklahoma, that besides the whole, you know, human trafficking, violence, murder, bribery, and bank fraud thing, theft of water and electricity was one of the calling cards of this Chinese organized crime running these illegal marijuana grow operations in Oklahoma. And here we have $1.5 million worth of metering problems resulting in the underbilling of commercial customers. And the entire town is paying the price for this $1.5 million of metering problems resulting in underbilling of commercial customers. Lindsay residents have reported their electricity bills doubling or even tripling since this gross mismanagement occurred. And keep in mind, this is before data centers around the country drove those electricity bills even higher. As always, it's the poor who pay the highest price. Also, honorable mention in the menagerie of dirtbaggery that was the forensic audit report for the City of Lindsay, City Manager Rebecca Nierenberger was helping herself to regular purchases of fuel for her daily commute at the town's expense, as well as giving raises to many city employees that were not approved by the city town council as required by law, including giving herself a raise without the town council's approval. And under the city's charter, a city manager who makes such unauthorized payments may be personally liable for that money. No word on whether or not the town has made any attempt to recover those funds. Also noteworthy, just days before the First National Bank of Lindsay failed and a lot of people lost millions of dollars, the city of Lindsay made the fortuitous and very well-timed decision to diversify its banking interests and moved most of its money out of First National Bank before it failed. The city council denies any prior knowledge of any problems at the bank, and coincidentally, at that time, Bank Vice President Clint Simonton's Aunt Bev Barker sat on the town council. Now, circling back to the Seibel indictment and those mystery borrowers, we're going to skip over borrower number two for a second here, and let's talk about borrower number three, who is described as an FNBL customer who owned and operated an HVAC business that often serviced marijuana grow houses. Borrower three and Seibel were also friends. And later on in the indictment, they describe borrower number three a bit more. On or about March 2nd, 2020, Seibel approved a $68,000 loan to a company co-owned by Seibel and borrower three for the purpose of purchasing real estate for resale. Borrower three and Seibel never made any payments on the loan. Instead, Seibel accessed FNBL's computer system on multiple days through 2020, 21, 22, and 23, and 24, and manually extended the maturity date on the loan. Seibel also made changes to the loan's payment date, i.e. the date the next payment was supposed to come due, and the number of times it had been past due, thereby concealing the loan's non-performance from the board and making the loan appear healthy. And it took some doing, but I was able to find the exact loan from the McLean County Clerk's website. You'll notice up there on the stamp, this loan was filed on March 3rd, 2020. That is the day described in the indictment for Danny Seibel. And right over there, you can see the mortgagor was Kennard and Seibel Investments, LLC, an Oklahoma Limited Liability Company. And on page two of that mortgage, right next to me here, you can see the loan amount, $68,773.41. That precisely matches the loan described in the Seibel indictment. And on page 10 of that mortgage, we now know who borrower number three is. Right next to me here, there's Danny Seibel's signature and his wife, Deborah, the owners of Kennard and Seibel Investments, LLC. And right above them is borrower number three, Eddie Chance Kennard. And right there is Eddie Chance Kennard. Also keep in mind the Seibel indictment described borrower number three as the owner of an HVAC business in the Lindsay area servicing marijuana grow operations and as friends with Danny Seibel. The Oklahoma Secretary of State website lists Kennard as the owner of Premier Refrigeration and HVAC Services, LLC, which is located in the nearby town of Purcell, Oklahoma. And right there under intro, you can see it mentions that they do commercial refrigeration. Remember, the indictment described servicing marijuana grow operations. And rounding out that description, you can see here from his Facebook page that Eddie Kennard is friends with both Danny and Debbie Seibel. And with friends like Danny Seibel, who needs enemies? Going back to that Seibel indictment, you can see here on or about March 29th, borrower 2's account was overdrawn by over $372,000. And the following day, Seibel created a new loan in the amount of $400,000 to cover the overdraft. Approximately 3 months later, on or about July 5th, 2023, Seibel reassigned that loan to a business associated with borrower 3 without notifying borrower 3 or others associated with that business. Now, it's worth pointing out here that the indictment against Danny Seibel does not list any explicit criminal acts by borrower number 3. Yes, he did sign up for that loan with Danny Seibel, and he was co-owner of that business, but based on the wording in the indictment, they appear to say that Seibel committed all the fraud associated with that loan. The only thing Eddie Chance did was not make any payments on it. Now, the same cannot be said of borrower number one and borrower number two, who are both listed as committing acts in furtherance of the criminal conspiracy at the bank. Which brings me to borrower number two. The Seibel indictment has plenty to say about borrower two. They say here that borrower two was a friend of Seibel's who owned several automotive businesses in and around the Lindsay area, as well as a company that purportedly sold signs and t-shirts. Borrower 2 controlled FNBL accounts tied to his various business endeavors, including a checking account in the name of one of his car businesses, and was a frequent gambler. The description in the Seibel indictment of borrower number 2 appears to match this man, Sean Christian. Now, Sean Christian was already on my radar prior to the Seibel indictment being released. In nearly every interview I had with Lindsay residents, either Sean Christian or his company, Winrock Speed Shop, was raised as a concern. Sean Christian owns several businesses in and around Lindsay, all pertaining to cars. His biggest business is Winrock Speed Shop, and he is also the owner of WSS Signs. Remember, the Seibel indictment described him as the owner of several automotive businesses and a business that purportedly sold signs and t-shirts. And the Seibel indictment also mentioned that borrower number 2 was friends with Danny Seibel. Here you can see from his Facebook page, Sean Christian is friends with both Danny Seibel and Debbie Seibel. And in most interviews I had with Lindsay residents, concerns were raised about suspicious happenings at Winrock Speed Shop, and attention was drawn to Sean Christian's extensive criminal background. And that is laid bare in this civil case that was brought by the Oklahoma Department of Securities against Sean Christian and others for his role in a fraudulent scheme involving a company called Empire Dispensary, where Christian illegally sold fake securities. A default judgment was entered against Christian, and he was ordered to pay restitution, as well as refrain from ever offering any securities in the state again. And on page 2 of that civil suit, we get a glimpse into Sean Christian's criminal history. Christian has an extensive criminal history, including multiple criminal convictions in the state of Oklahoma, and served time in prison. The convictions included embezzlement, bogus check fraud, obtaining money by false pretenses, forgery, and home repair fraud. Christian has not been registered in any capacity under the act, referring to him not being registered to sell securities. So you can see here, Sean Christian, besides being friends with Danny Seibel, owning an automotive business and a sign business in Lindsay, he's also got an extensive criminal background. And when I ran Christian through facial recognition, I came up with this video where he's receiving a gift of a monster truck with some awful big tires that you could probably fit a lot of air inside of. And here's Christian in black receiving the vehicle. Now, interestingly enough, that man in the gray t-shirt there giving him the vehicle, that's James Goad, otherwise known as Reaper SS. And if he looks familiar, he was one of the stars of the Discovery Channel TV show Street Outlaws. And Goad also has an extensive criminal background, including charges and convictions for possession of a controlled drug with intent to distribute. Now, Sean Christian operates Winrock Speed Shop out of a property right off of I-35 in a town of Purcell, which is about 15 miles northeast of Lindsay. And the interesting thing about that property is it's owned by an outfit called Purple Dog Investments, LLC. And according to the Oklahoma Secretary of State's website, Purple Dog Investments, LLC is owned by a woman named Nina Wadley. And anybody from Garvin County will immediately recognize that name because Nina Wadley is the wife of Seth Wadley, a prominent businessman in Garvin County who most notably runs the Seth Wadley Auto Group in nearby Paul's Valley, which is also right off of that I-35 corridor. And this is where things start to get a little bizarre. Because when you do a Google image search for Seth Wadley, you get some strange results. You get this. And you get this, and this, and this. Seeing a pattern here? Back in 2020, when we were all under lockdown with the vid, whether we wanted to hear it or not, we were all bombarded with talk and posts about this guy, Joe Exotic, otherwise known as the Tiger King, from the strangely successful Netflix series of the same name. And while there is certainly a lot we could say about this guy and his flamboyant, exotic, eccentric even lifestyle, there are a couple of things that we do know about this guy. He's in jail for attempted murder. He tried to hire somebody to murder his rival, Carol Baskin, who was very critical of his treatments of the tigers that he kept at his compound. He was also found guilty for multiple charges for cruelty and trafficking of animals. He killed 5 tigers by shooting them in the head, and he also trafficked them to other animal parks illegally all around the country. And for whatever reason, this guy loves Seth Wadley. He wears the hat. You watch the show, he's got the hat on half the time. It turns out that Joe Exotic's compound, the Greater Wynwood Exotic Animal Park, which has since been closed down, was located just about 20 miles southeast of the town of Lindsay, Oklahoma, and only about 10 miles south of Paul's Valley and Seth Wadley Auto Group, where Tiger King presumably bought his trucks. Now, he never really explained what his fascination was with the hat. He mentioned at one point that Seth Wadley sold him his trucks, and that was just about it. It became part of his signature look. And in October of 2020, these hats were selling like crazy. The Tiger King Starter Kit Halloween costume, Seth Wadley Auto Group was posting quite often about how many hats they were selling because everybody and their brother wanted to be Tiger King for Halloween for some reason. Wadley even leaned into this phenomenon, making an ad with a Tiger King lookalike.
Did you buy a truck and think to yourself, I am never going to financially recover from this? You should have bought it from Seth Wadley Ford. Have you been to other car dealers and felt like they ain't being that straight with you? Seth Wadley Ford has over $18 million of exotic used truck inventory alone.
Now, it's just a hat, right? Doesn't really mean anything. But I just couldn't shake this. And the more I thought about it and the more I marinated on this, I thought to myself, gee, you know what a guy who deals in exotic tigers and illegally transports them all around the country and illegally brings them into the country, do you know what he would need? Well, he would need a network of smugglers with connections in China, wouldn't he? And that's what led me to this paper that was published in Springer Nature Link. It was jointly authored by researchers at City University of Hong Kong and Utrecht University in the Netherlands. Chinese organized crime and the illegal wildlife trade, diversification and outsourcing in the Golden Triangle. The illegal wildlife trade has increasingly been linked to organized crime in recent years. In particular, Chinese crime groups, i.e. the Chinese triads, seem to be major players in more organized forms of this trade. And from within that paper, the larger groups were often related to bigger or persistent smuggling operations, usually with high-value wildlife products such as tiger skins, tiger bones, and rhino horns. The cases were sometimes connected to drug trafficking, in particular, methamphetamine. Well, gosh, if that sure doesn't rhyme with what we're seeing in the area around Garvin County. And you can find more on this in this paper, Triads, Snakeheads, and Flying Money, by the Jack D. Gordon Institute for Public Policy, The Underworld of Chinese Criminal Networks in Latin America and the Caribbean. Over the past decade, Chinese criminal groups operating in Latin America and the Caribbean have specialized in four illegal activities. They ship fentanyl precursors to Mexico, where cartels make them into potent drugs that kill 200 U.S. lives every day, launder money using the flying money method, that's the mirror transactions we talked about earlier, adding to cartel coffers that fuel destabilizing violence across the region, illegally traffic wildlife while also engaging in other serious crimes, a concept called convergence, and smuggle an unprecedented number of illegal Chinese migrants crossing the U.S. border through Latin America. Now, normally I would end one of my videos with a segment I call Long Story Short. How the hell do you make this long story short? I told you guys at the beginning that we started with this tiny little bank that nobody cared about in this tiny little town that nobody cared about. To this day, it looks like still nobody cares about it. We described the suffering that's going on in Lindsay and the nearby towns. The local utility has been bled dry. The town has been bled dry. The town next door, the school, was bled dry because the superintendent covered up the sexual abuse of children, bankrupting the town. That same superintendent has multiple charges for domestic violence. We talked about the three big players at the bank, one of whom mysteriously takes his own life right before the bank fails. The other one owns a pharmacy and happens to be on the board of directors of this nonprofit medical clinic where money and drugs could have just been walking out the door this whole time and nobody would have known because nobody kept any records. The CEO of the bank was helping him run that nonprofit health clinic. That bank CEO has now been indicted, naming these three borrowers, two of which have extensive criminal backgrounds, and borrowers one and two are believed to be engaged in this criminal conspiracy at the bank. One of them operates a trucking company. The other one operates an auto company. That guy operates his shady car company out of a building owned by the wife of a very prominent local businessman who sells hats. And the Tiger King really likes those hats. And the Tiger King, he's in jail for trying to have somebody killed and for killing and smuggling tigers. And all of this just happens to be taking place within a 20-mile radius, all along I-35, one of the most prolific drug smuggling and human trafficking corridors in America, right smack in the middle of Oklahoma, a state where the illicit marijuana trade has been totally taken over by Chinese triads who have people working in modern-day slavery conditions, all while helping Mexican cartels smuggle drugs and launder the proceeds from methamphetamine and fentanyl, a drug trade that has a body count in the hundreds of thousands. Take a good hard look at this map, and you tell me what's going on here. Now, maybe this is all just a crazy coincidence, and one day we'll all look back on this and laugh. But the people in Lindsay, Oklahoma are not laughing. They feel hopeless. They feel like nobody cares. They feel like no matter what happens, they're always going to get away with it, and nothing will ever change. Since this bank has failed, and since almost $60 million has gone missing, one man has been indicted, a guy with a fancy Jeep Wrangler and an above-ground pool in his backyard. We're supposed to believe that's where $60 million went? Or just maybe in this one little story that nobody even cared enough to look into, even a little bit, just maybe there's something much bigger and much darker going on in the town of Lindsay. These people have been through a lot. Much has been stolen from them. Lives have been ruined, in some cases ended, families torn apart. Local authorities will not do anything about this. The local government will not do anything about this. I can only hope after watching this video, enough of you share it and this gets enough attention that just maybe some state or even federal people might get involved and figure out just what the hell is going on in this tiny town of Lindsay. Till next time, live small and dream big.